For me. To show how glad she was that I'd helped her. And I didn't. She helped me more than I helped her. She gave my family a home. And I just helped, I just only did it because, well, naturally you have to work when you stay at a place. I mean, you know, work for your room and board, that's what I did. And she didn't have money, you know, to buy food. She made a little bit when she sewed, but I told her not to feel bad about it because she was doing her share of work, more than her share of work, and she worked very good. And she was a middle, she's about in her late 30s now, or early 40s now. But I didn't feel she had to buy food or anything, but always she have a very special little feeling for Joey.
Who she delivered?
She
Or
didn't
who she
deliver,
helped Rhea, I mean, I know
Joey.
She well, she didn't help bring, she didn't help Rhea him while he
not rear him, but she helped me. See, I fainted every so often, and I'd made her promise. I'd say, Ruth, please don't ever get the nurse. I'll never forgive you if you got them. If you, a lot of these natives believe that a real natural childbirth at home is number one, is the best thing. They don't like these jabs with needles, and I don't like it either. They give you a needle, so this. See, I had Lorna at home, and then when I had Joey, well, I had him at home, but the nurse delivered him. And they give you a needle, say that so that your blood don't flow too fast, that you don't lose too much blood. What she did was she gave me a needle. She didn't think I was going to have a baby until the next day, maybe after quite a few hours, and within the next 12 hours I wasn't going to have a baby, but I fooled her. She gave me a needle. She says, this is just to relax you, so you just try and sleep a little while, because my legs were sore, you know, I was in bed for 3 months. Just as she turned around with the needle, I had the baby, and she threw the needle away in a woodpile. But, and then right after I had baby, she gave me another needle. She said, this is so that I don't lose too much blood. But what happened was, I think she must have given it to me a little too strong, or maybe too much, because then I didn't lose no blood at all, nothing. For the first day I did, but the next 2 days there was nothing. And by the time 5 days old, I felt so good. When Joey was 5 days old, in the sixth morning I started to get out of bed, I felt great. But, well, I didn't lose any blood, and I was real scared about this, you know. I didn't know too much about it, but I was sure that it should be more than this. And I started to get up and clump. I didn't know anything. And this kept on, and then my stomach was so hard. So, and then I was scared, she's only going to give me a needle again, and then I'm going to get sick with it again. So this woman, she didn't grab at my side, it's not what you call septic, but to give me little comfort, she rubbed round and round my stomach there, she rubbed round and round, and I'd fall asleep, and I'd get up. And then she rubbed and rubbed it for, you know, just, she rested, and then she rubbed, and gave me hot water to drink to see if it might start the flow or something. And then anyway, I did, and but it was really, I really suffered, you know, I never suffered with anything more. And then once it started flowing, all the clogs and everything, and when I was laying back, you know, and if I was just pouring so much later after it had started, that if I moved my head this way, I'd pass out. And I told her not to tell the nurse, because she'd only give me another needle and it would cause it to clog up. This is what I thought with the first needle I ever got. I mean, I'm not against doctors and nurses, but but a lot of women say it's good to have your baby at home. In the hospital, they give you so many needles, you never get good right away. Feel that if you heal by your own self without the aid of doctor or medicine or anything, it's the best, unless you're really sick, of course. But the baby was feeding. I was gonna feed it from me, you see. So while I'm laying on my back like this, she was even scared to raise my pillow up, you know, so I sort of sit up. So she hold the baby there, and she nursed it herself from my breast. She told the breastfeed, and then of course my breast got big and hard because it wasn't being taken care of. But I got over this anyway. But this way, I always feel, even now, if I should see her in need, I'd help her, and if she wanted to pay, I'd never hear of it. I can spend my life trying to repay her for what she had done for me. She looked after my children, and you know, she did a real darn good job of it. Well, a lot of them have helped me in a lot of ways, but I mean, maybe they've worked a little for me, but with pay, or some of them didn't do it very good. Babysitters don't do them so good, but this woman, she really knew her way. She did a real good job of it, and I'll always feel that I owe her a little something because of what she had done for me. And this way she looked after little Joey, and she feels very close to him. She feels he's something precious to her anyway. If she has anything spare, her husband doesn't work. He's fishing all loose or trapping out in the bush.
Yeah.
But she'd come in with a nice pair of little strout tops and fronts ready to sew mukluks that she had trimmed for him because he's a little special to her. She trimmed something like this for him all the time. So he always has fancy mukluks.
Does she call him any special kinship?
No. It's just his nickname was, Joe and these people, his name is Joey.
Yeah.
But they called him this in school, they started calling him Joey or Joseph, but mostly Joey for short. They always said Doing Doing. Lorna called him Doing Doing from when he was just a small, trying to say Joey, she'd say Doing. And then everybody called him Doing Doing, and that's all she always calls him, is Doing Doing. She always says, he gives a real big smile. And I've explained to Joey, because he wonders why this woman likes him a lot. So I've explained it all to him long ago. I've told him why he's a little bit special to her from the other families. This woman, why she really was attached to him from when he was real small, is she was able to bear fruit herself, but she's a big, big, tough looking woman. She's lost a lot of weight since. But she had a lot of miscarriages. She had nothing but miscarriage after miscarriage. So the children she have are adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And very well taken care of. She's very good with them. She drinks quite a bit, but she's a very good mother to the children. That's why I think she likes little children very much. Joey was the little wee one she looked after. And he was a tiny baby. He was about a 6-pounder, I suppose.
I have another question about terms. Here are the sea lyrics up here, down here at the coast, and up here are the Nunatamiut. Is there any word that the Eskimo have for such groupings? When you want to speak of the sea lyric as a group, the Nunatamiut?
Well, that's their name. Siglir is the Siglir group at Tuck, and Nunatamiut is the Delta group.
In English, you would say there are two groups.
Uh-huh.
In Eskimo, what would you say? Well, is there any word for such groups?
Well, a lot of them say they're Siglirs, they are Siglirs, and they are Nunatamiuts. If the only best way I can say it is, some people will say Tareormiut, that means the people by the salt sea or by the sea. Tareormiut. I never heard them use this too much, but I imagine this is what you might be pointing at. They call them Tareormiut, and then down there they call these ones Umaramiut, that means people of the Delta.
No,
that's two groups.
No. Here's Siglik, here's Eastern, what do you call them?
Kirkmalik,
here's Nunatamiut. What, how do you say there are three what's around here? The people here come from three. Just one word to call the, we would say from three groups. Now what, do you have a word that would, you know?
For such groupings.
Mm.
The word Larit doesn't cover it.
No, I don't think there would be any such thing. The only way I know them, how people place them separately or by group, is the Nunatamiut, Siglik, Kangmalik, and some of them will say the Tareormiut and Umaramiut.
You would say one.
No.
Babla is called Siglik, another, whatever the word would be, is called Nunatamiut.
And is it possible for you to say that he is of a different community than this one? He is of a different group than this one? Could you say that in Eskimo? She is not of the same community.
You mean of the same?
Well, the Nunatamiut, you want to say that this one being a Nunatamiut is not of the same something as this one?
Well, no. Well,
a different kind of person?
Well, you take my husband, myself.
Yep.
My husband is Nunatamiut. I'm Siglik.
Yep.
But nobody comes up to us and say, you're a Nunatamiut, you married a Siglik. But I wouldn't know of what kind of what you mean by there, because we never put them in a group, or we just say Kangmalik or Siglik or Nunatamiut.
You don't think of these as groups?
No.
Like the French are a different group from the English.
Well, we think that, well, I mean, we think that these Siglik's, they got their own group.
Yeah.
They are Siglik's,
yeah.
They are, and there are Kagmalik's, and there are Nunatamiut's. Well, naturally, without explanation, you can tell that that bunch is the Nunatamiut group.
Yeah.
And this is the Siglik family group, and that is the other Kagmalik group. But, I mean, you just, this is just the way they are.
But you have to rely on the English word group
to
speak to me. You can't use you can't find an Eskimo term for that word group, can you?
Well, that's Siglikamiut, Nunatamiut. That's just, there's no other way.
That word that you got from your book.
Oh, but the word Ilarit or
Ilagit.
Ilagit, that doesn't.
I wouldn't know that language anyway if it's from Labrador or whatever.
Ilat.
No. Well, Ilagit means relations. Ilagit means relations in our language. Ilagun means separate. Ilagun is separate. Or Ilagit is families.
Ilagit is families or relatives.
Yeah. Ilagit is families or relatives. And Ilagun means separate. Ilagun is like,
mm-hmm.
I'll put these two Ilagun,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
separate them.
Okay.
But for groups in Eskimo, if they said a group of Tuk people, they'd say Siglikamiut, mute, always. Or a group of Nunatamiut, they'd say Nunatamiut. Or Umaramiut, that means people of the trees.
Now, all the people, you know, Collins people and your mother's people and all those, they are all Ilagit relatives. They're all your Ilagit.
They're all my Ila, yeah.
Your
There's Ila, Ilagit, like family, families.
Mm-hmm. So they're all your relatives, they're all your Ila.
Yeah.
You would say.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But
are all Sigleks all your Ila? All the Siglik?
Well, we are Siglik, but they're not all my Ila. Ila means family, to do with your family, Ila. Ilagit is families. But I wouldn't say that Sigliks are my Ilagit. They're my Nunakatigit. That means I come from the same place as them. Nunakatigit means people that come from the same
land,
like Nuna means land. You see, it's Nunakatitka or Inukatitka means people I've lived with all the time. Inukatitka. people I've lived with. It could mean anybody. Like maybe I'll say Ino Khatigiyatka Alaskan Unatam, or that means I've lived all my life with the Alaskan these people, but I really come from Tuk.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say this. But Nunakatitka means, well, I guess that's what you would use is Nunakatitka is I come from the same land as these people. Well, I did come from the same land as them, but I'm not all their illa. I'm not their illagit. I'm one like them, but I'm not their family. But
so it seems like
I'm Nunakatit. Yeah. But mind you, my mom and my, them, they often say, they, well, they like to, they've been with the Nunatamios all the time, ever since the.
Yeah.
But still, that doesn't make them praise the Nunatamios. They have a lot of things against the Nunatamios. They say, ah, those Nunatamios, they're just no good and all.
I wonder how long.
But they won't dare say that in front of me because.
<You're married.
laughs> Yeah, and a lot of times they slip, and I go down to my mother's place, and my mom said, "Ah, Kali, iter viginga yain." I said, "What? Iter viginga yain?" And I try not to let her know that I didn't understand her. I can understand real well, but sometimes it takes a while to sink in. And then I think, I got it. Yeah, I says, thank you. She said, well, what did you think I was talking about? Well, I didn't, you know, I says, I know what it is, but it sort of slipped. Well, you better not let your language slip out of you, she'd say. Well, I told her, well, Mom, I says, if somebody came to me and say, Isherwinan Ariga, I just know it right off. Because Nunatarmiok, for fur on the hood, my mother say, Iterviginayain. That means how nice fur, you know. Iterviginayain. And I never used that. I mean, there's hardly any Shigilachs around, not that many. And gee whiz, I thought, I talk with so much. I'm mostly amongst my husband's side of the family all the time. Not that I like them better, but it seems like I'm always amongst them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always Nunatamiochs amongst us all the time, and I lived with the Nunatamiochs, you know, in the delta there. After I got married, we were amongst the ones that's full Nunatamiochs all the time. And then I can speak both languages, but I think I speak more Nunatamiochs than I realize I do. So when my mom says, "Iter vigingayain," and then I think for a while, and then I learn to just smile at my mom if she says something to me and I didn't catch it right away. Of course, I'll catch it a little while later sometimes. And Nunatame will say, Sherwin Naringayain. They say that. I know what it means right off.
Would anybody ever consider you Nunatame?
No, I don't think.
You haven't been here long enough, or you will never become?
I don't think they'll ever take me as a full Nunatame. Because, I've been married 13 years, and they never think that I'm, just because I married a Nunatamiok and I've stayed in a Nunatamiok, we've stayed in a delta ever since I was about 4 years old, 3 years old.
Mm.
Still, they never consider us as Nunatamioks. We're Shigilachs to them. We're born Shigilachs. We got Shigilach blood in us. So we are Shigilach.
And what about your children?
I don't know what they would take them as, but I think that they go by. I've heard enough about Shigilachs and this to know, to wonder what they'll be like. So they wouldn't dare let me know what they think my children are right now until they grow older, and then they find fault in them and they say, "Oh," another dame will say, they find fault in Jeffrey, for instance. Oh, he probably takes after his Shigilach mother, that's why he does that. Nunatame will say that. He probably takes after his Shigilach background, that's why he does that. And then a Shigilach will say, oh, that's that Nunatame of blood he's got in him that makes him do that. So they don't really, you know, they don't really think nothing of my children now. They are born, but a lot of people, They're so very proud of me. I don't know what's so good about me, but they think that they always say, she's a very, a lot of them will call me Ukwagalung. My sister-in-law, they praise me very much. They always tell the Tama families or relation to them, they'll always say, Colin's got the best looking wife in his family. He's not the best looking in amongst his brothers. He's the oddest, you know, his brothers, they think his brothers are better looking than him. He's the one that doesn't look as nice as his brothers, but he's got the best looking wife in his family. And they can't beat her now. And they think because I look like a white, they think that I'm real good. I don't know how much they can be, but they're very proud of Colin. They say, we're so proud of Colin. He's got a nice-looking wife, and his wife, she looks young, and she's still young, but she really can raise her family. She knows how to raise her family. A lot of people think that I do so well with my children. You know, a lot of these natives, they think, you're so good with your children. You know, your children, how do they know? Because they watch my children, they say. Because they see my children. And old Pililuk there, I don't visit them, but one day he comes over, he says, you know, he said, I'm getting to be an old man. And I've seen a lot of children in my time, but I think you're doing a real good job with your little family. I says, how do you know? Well, I often watch them through the window. And he says, and you don't have to go tearing down the street chasing one after the other. He says, they don't run away from home, do they? I says, well, don't you believe it? I says, sometimes they try. I says, but I don't let them. And he says, well, your little wee ones there, your three youngest ones, they stay outside. And that's right. I can stay inside and do all my work without having to worry about one of them, you know, running away or maybe straying off the street. But they're taught to stay around at home. And he'll tell me this, and the other Nunatamers too, and the Siglers, they tell me this. And maybe a Sigler will come from Tak, and I'm pretty conscious of it. I know there's a Sigler there listening to me, and she'll probably say something to me. Now there's an old Nunatame or a person Nunatame comes to me, and she speaks to me. I know she can't speak too well in English. She speaks to me in Nunatame, or she says, could you talk for me, interpret for me? I like to say this, and I feel I can't say it very good. So I just blabber away with my best Nunatamir, and then a Sigler will, just standing on the side there, and she happened to hear, and mind you, she wouldn't let me go by without reminding me. Akali Sigli Nunatamir, they said, boy, you sure turned to Nunatamir. They're sure to tell me something like this. So I'll tell them, well, I'm married to Anunatamir, so I have to learn his language, but don't forget, my first language is Siglech. And they got a smile because of my love.
You see what you just done, you call people
Nunatamir. Yeah, well, we take him as Nunatamir. We know he's Alaskan, but people have called him Nunatamir all the time. My father-in-law will say, Nunatamir ngungichuring na Alaskamir. He said, he's not Nunatamir, he's an Alaska person. But us younger people, we've known him. We've grown up in the Delta while Pililuk is here.
He himself calls himself Nunatamir.
Yeah, he does, I know. But for us, I don't know why it won't change, but when I was just a little girl, I seen Pililuk here in Delta. And then a lot of us will naturally call him Nunatamir. But when we think of it, we know he's really an Alaska person, his wife and himself. There's a few of them in town, quite a few of them.
I have heard that when there is a puzzle, I've asked people, how do you classify this person? I have heard it said that, well, his father was Nunatamiut, regardless of what the mother was. His father was Nunatamiut, so he's Nunatamiut. She's Nunatamiut because the father is. It follows the father. How do you feel about that?
Well, some will say this, but I don't think anybody will say, well, Jesse's father was a white man, so she's a white lady.
No, they won't say that.
They
will say that your children are Nunatamiut because your husband is, their father is Nunatamiut.
Yes, well, they'll probably think they are Nunatamiu now. But like I say, if my children grew up and they had a bad streak in them, they'll say, well, he's probably got a sigilich streak in her.
Do they ever say it's that white blood and how that's ruined her kids?
Well, they'll probably say that about me. That. But they say, well, boy, those policemen, they think they're so good and they sure left a lot of seats behind along the coast.
Yes, I've heard that. I've never
known
you, but I've heard that.
Well, I've heard that about me and I've heard about, I mean, they've never really been rude enough to approach me with it, but they'd say, well, boy, those police boys, they sure left a lot of nice looking girls behind and all, you know, they say it in a nice way to me, but I've heard others say, well, boy, those policemen, they think they're so big and mighty and they're always after somebody to do so and so, and why weren't the natives smart enough to get that whole force down and make them pay support money for their children in those days and all. Now that they know that things like this can be done.
Natives don't even do that today?
No, well, there are a couple of girls that I know will do this.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, Lisbeth is trying to get support for her little baby.
Yeah. From the husband?
Uh-huh.
Is he?
From her husband. From the father of her.
From the father of her child. Uh-huh.
Why do you have a native father?
You mean a native father?
Child's father, is he white or native?
He's white.
Would you also try to do it for a native father, biological father?
I think she would.
Yeah.
She's the sort that will do this. I mean, she's not all dumb. Well, some people just don't give a darn. It was my fault that I had this baby. Well, that's it. But I don't know. I shouldn't even maybe mention this about Elizabeth because I think they're keeping it quite confidential. They're just starting to work on it. And, you know, whatever welfare works as is supposed to be confidential.
You don't know.
She's
well,
got
well,
Art
well
doing this for
helping
her.
With
no, she's not getting any help from him. She's gonna see if she can get any support. She got Art to do this for her.
Art Clifford.
Mm-hmm. But don't mention anything about confidentiality. They're just about this custom of not getting, trying to get support. We were in Austria. We worked in Austria. In Austria, there are many women who come into marriage with one child and another child out of wedlock. This is quite common in Austria. But when the girl goes to register the baby's birth, the first thing that it's not the police there, but somebody else, but the first thing they say to her is, who is the father? And then they say, now we'll proceed to get support for this.
A lot
man.
Of these girls, if they ask them who's the father, they just say, none of your business. Well, some of them will say, none of your business, and some of them will say, just keep mum. If they asked me that, I just said unknown. I knew who he was. I didn't want anything to do with this guy anymore afterwards. And my auntie don't want me to get no support from him. I would have asked for support for the child from the father of this baby that I had, Jeffrey. I thought of getting support. When the doctor talked to me, I told him, well, if it's possible that the father supported this child, but my he says, no, I don't want that guy's dirty money around me. So when they asked me, who's the father? I said, unknown. And they got it that way. And then a lot of these girls, why I heard this is Miss Porter asked them in front of me at the transit, said, none of your business. And I says, do you give the police that answer, the doctor that answer if they ask you? Why, certainly, it's none of their business. I said, well, what are you going
to
do? They don't want support. My auntie and them, they wouldn't. Well, they felt they could support him, and you know, they didn't want anything. They were gonna adopt him. She was carrying Georgina at the time, and she was gonna take Jeffrey, adopt him herself. But then I stay with her, and she said, as soon as Georgina is about 3-4 months old, you know, then she's gonna really. Well, she always looked after him. She's the one that raised him up for the first year of his life.
Are these girls that said none of your business, are they going to give their babies out?
They have given them away, or they just left them.
See, they don't need support.
No. But then most girls are doing this.
Are giving them out of adoption.
I never see a young girl keep their baby. don't remember, but I've seen her. Yeah, well, she's probably, her mother will probably raise it up. She's probably thinking this, or maybe her mother told her, you keep that baby. My auntie told Lisbeth, Lisbeth, if you want that baby, she says, you keep it. Or Lisbeth, it's not Lisbeth. We don't think of it as, well, it is Lisbeth's baby, but we all know she's not going to raise it up. Annie is going to raise it, or look it up, look after it for her. Like Clara, when she had a baby, my auntie, she asked Clara, well, are you going to keep the baby? Yes, I'll keep it. And she was going to marry the father of the baby, but my John wouldn't let her marry the father of the child. And we all were against it because he was not a very good guy. I mean, he might have been a good provider for it, but he was very mean to her. And even now he's got no business on her. She's just scared to be alone because he always threatens he's going to kill her or something, you know, and I tell her to go to the police about this. But he feels very bad in losing her, I guess. And yet he doesn't like to treat her right if he's got her.
And no thought of support there?
No.
And he doesn't think that it would help her to provide if she had a little income from...
Well, I suppose if she didn't want any support from my oldest child, I don't think she would do that with her own very own daughter. She always think of taking that child, right? She said she'd raise it up as her own. And therefore, maybe if Clara had no home, maybe then she would ask for support. But... Well, I don't know if Lisbeth got this idea from me or if she got it from herself. But I told her, I says, if you want to keep that baby, I says, I don't know why you girls don't ask for support from the guys that get you into this. And she did this for the first one, you see, but before the papers got through, well, she think herself as... She couldn't look after it herself. She wanted to... She knows she wasn't able to look after it, give it a home or anything, even if she did get support. So she put it for, this couple in Yellowknife, well, they just wanted this child. And she knew this couple before. And they wanted to go right into adoption. So she told them, okay, you know, she was going to do this even from the first one. But now I think with this second one, I haven't heard. I don't want to make it my business, or I don't want to ask her because it's not something very nice to ask about yet. Probably she'll keep it to herself until everything is all out, and she'll come and tell me.
Where did you hear this information that you're giving to your...
I read.
The book?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Whatever I know is mostly from books.
I just want to have the ideas... Let me ask you about adoption, because now that you're talking about it, I have some questions. Supposing two people want to adopt a baby. A girl has a baby. Has anybody got the first right to adopt?
Parents.
That's not official, but that's just...
In a native home. In a native home, if a person says, my daughter is going to have a baby, and... What's she going to do with it? Is she going to put it up for adoption, or is she going to keep it? No, naturally, I'm going to keep it. And this, in most cases, for the oldest child of their daughter, is always in the home of a parent, most of them.
Her parents?
In the home of the girl's parents. The parents naturally take their first granddaughter or son on to raise as their own. But the second one, a lot of them will say, well, you take care of the rest from yourself. From now on, and don't expect no help from us, or don't expect us to take care of any more from you. But I don't know how it was in earlier years, but now I know that when a young girl is pregnant, welfare usually butts in or jumps in, or probably the nurse or the doctor lets them know about it, and then this. And I'd ask Miss Porter at one time if she looked into the matter, because the mother had asked her to, or because they had to do it themselves? And she says no. She says they wait for word from the mother first. Like Lisbeth, they didn't tell her nothing. She didn't go to them, and I'd ask her, you know. She says they wait for, well, they wait, and maybe the nurse or the doctor will always ask, what are you going to do with this baby? Are you going to keep it, or are you going to give it for adoption? And as soon as it's for adoption, well, then they have to see the welfare about it. They give them a ring. And then the welfare goes over and says, I heard that you were going to give your baby up, you know, and would you like us to take care of it, see that it's placed in a good home? And most smart mothers will say yes, because I think it's smarter to go through letting the welfare find good homes, because they see that they find good homes for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do anyway. But and a lot of them will tell Miss Porter or whoever was working in the welfare, well, I promised to give it to so-and-so. And then Miss Porter will probably say, or the welfare will probably say, well, the parents that you want to give this child to is something very serious. And she'll also to the people that this girl said she would give it to, you know. And they have a very large family, and they're in their 40s now, or maybe in their early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Well, looking after a baby is nothing for a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
She says, when they get to be about 6 years old, these parents will be about this old. And you think that they'll always be able to support your baby? This family, well, the youngest might be maybe 16, say. And they, well, fine, there's no other children, you know, but they have to think of when they get old, when this child is about school age, about 6 years old, then who's going to support it? Will the father be able to still support that child, the adoptive father? She'd look into this very good. I knew she did this. She told me all about it, and at this place, you know, she talked to the girls in front of me. She said this is something they have to look into and see if the father is a good provider and if the mother is a good mother. And if the girl says, well, I'm going to just give it to them with no papers, nothing, just giving it to them. Well, Miss Porter would think, well, it's her own chance she's taken, so she wouldn't force,
mm-hmm.
unless she see a place where she may really have to step in. Maybe the parent, maybe the children, the... She can't force, nobody can force a girl on who to give her kids to. But Porter would really look into the home situation before she... And then she'd talk to them over and over and maybe try and change their mind for them. Like this young girl I know from Fort McPherson, this Linda, she was 18 years old. You know, Sarah Bonaplume. Well, she's 40-something years old, 41, isn't it? And her husband was 73,
mm-hmm.
and she had talked to this girl, and she's gonna get this girl says, well, I promised Sarah I'd give it to her.
And
so
Sarah wants it.
And Sarah wants it. Sarah asked for it, and I promised to give it to her. And my parents say it's okay if I give it to Sarah, but Miss Porter came time after time to try and reason with her and try and let her know, well, what happens is she raised 17 children. Well, okay, she did. Maybe she did a good job on them. But her husband is 73 years old.
And what happened?
And who's gonna, well, maybe if he die a year from now, then who's gonna support it for Sarah? And if Sarah says she can work, then who's she gonna have to look after this child while she's working? And it's hard to get a job at the age of 40, and there's no jobs for women like her in town, you know, she can't work for very long. And you never know of when your health may fail you that age. And so she talked to this girl, and then this girl says, okay, then if you think it best that you can find a better home for it, well, fine.
And wouldn't Sarah be angry with the girl now?
Well, she couldn't hardly do any much. Well, Miss Porter would go over to her and talk with her, you know. And most people will understand if somebody tells them. It's, I think that nobody talks to them. They just go into the first mind, you know, just go into the first thought. The first thought that goes in their mind, they go ahead and do, and then maybe years they'd be sorry. And, Mrs. Porter now, Lisbeth, the oldest daughter she had, she brought it back home. She had it here in town, she brought it home from the hospital. And Evelyn and Art Dodman, they're not even married. They've got about 8 kids. It is common law. He was married before, so they couldn't get married again, no divorce. So they lived together and they had a lot of children. And he drinks an awful lot. He's a good provider. He's a good cook and he can get any kind of job he likes. You know, he got a good job as a cook. I don't know, I think you might have seen
him.
Art Dodman, he was the cook.
On the other side?
They're very dark. They're transferred to Yellowknife now to cook in that new police place they got.
Oh, yes, the boy's going to follow them down.
Uh-huh. But he was, I think he's not Art's child, Adam. She had him before she started living with Art, all the other children. A very dark couple. So Elizabeth knew Archie, used to work with him in the rehab kitchen here. So she brought this child up to Evelyn to keep, and Evelyn's going to look after it. Then she looked after it for a while, and then Miss Porter looked into this. And Art used to work as somebody went out, and he filled in as a social worker for a while here in the summer.
Dodman.
But she knew he drank lots, and everybody knows he's a heavy drinker. He drinks all the time, and they're just living common law, and they were smart enough to know that they couldn't adopt it. They wouldn't have been approved parents. But they were looking after it, and they had a big family. So Miss Porter sort of looked into it, and she had a talk with Evelyn and made Evelyn realize, what if that child were to get older and then Elizabeth would all of a sudden want it, you know, back. And she didn't try to make them enemies. Of course they never, Elizabeth understood and Evelyn understood, and they're still friends. She was a friend of theirs. And then she Lisbeth didn't know what to think about this, so I told Lisbeth, I says, well, you tell Miss Porter that if you don't want to look after, or I know you want to look after it, but it's best that you put it in an adopting home. I said, it's better for the child all around. I says, Lisbeth, I says, I could offer to take that child, but I can't promise you that I'm not too good keen on adopting, you know. I let her know the true fact, that I'm still having children of my own, and I'm still young, and I can have a whole lot more. And I'm very much against anything for stopping children by being conceived or anything, but birth control and all, I told her, I'm very much against that, and I'll probably keep on having children all my life. I said, but I says, and you know I'm pregnant again. I'm expecting, maybe I'd have taken it. I wouldn't guarantee you that I'm all overjoyed about taking it. I'd take it just because out of family, you know, just for family's sake.
Yeah.
And then again, Annie can take it. And I tried so hard to explain this about Annie to her. I'm not against Annie. I think she did a pretty good job in taking care of me anyway when I was a child. But she's a changed woman now. They're both changed from the time they were raising me up and their own. But for the oldest one, I talked to her and I told her, well, you tell Miss Porter, because your family is so against you. They says, Mary, all her children, and I guess why my mom would never think of giving her own children away, even she had no husband for support, you know. And she looked after all of them, and I told her. And this way my family thought it was, Annie said, well, you're not to give that child away. Don't you give it away. If you don't want to look after it, then put it into one of the families, Jesse's or Mom's, Mary's or my home. And then I talked to Elizabeth. I said, you explained to Miss Porter that you'd like to put it in an adopting home, Elizabeth. I says, please, for the sake of the baby, that it will be in good care. Miss Porter will see that it's in a good home. As if all the social workers, you know, they see that they're going to place a child in a home that it's good, a good home before they can place, before they can let it be adopted. One thing explained to her is please see if she can find a home for it, a place out of the Delta, out of here.
Why?
Because the family was very much against her giving it away. And maybe Annie would say something to the parents. She's very, can't control her tongue if she's drinking, you see. And maybe if she came across this family, she'd say something funny and make them feel hurt about it. And maybe as the child is growing up, then they would talk to this child and say something that would make the child sorry, you know. So I told Elizabeth, see if she could find a home. Surely you must know somebody in Yellowknife because she's been there before. I says, well, you can't pick out your own, I says, but see if she could find a home for it in Yellowknife, even a foster home. But I says, I'd sooner it to be in an adopting home and adopt so that it never be put from one place to the next place if it's a foster child. So she had to talk with Miss Porter. And then Miss Porter had come over and asked if I had put these words into the mouth of Elizabeth. I said, no. I said, Elizabeth has been slow to grow up. She always had to have the advice of somebody else, you know. She always had to have somebody telling her what to do. So I talked to her and we discussed this whole thing and we'd come to this thing as the best thing we could think of. Miss Porter said, thank you, I just wanted to know for sure if this was her thought. I told Miss Porter then that Elizabeth always depended on one of the family to tell her what to do all the time. So she found a very nice home for it in Yellowknife, and they sent us pictures of the child every so often. And they want to let it grow up to know that, well, Elizabeth was there working and she often stayed with them, you know. They're going to let it know that it's from an Eskimo home, from an Eskimo girl, and that she's got relations over on this side, and this is what we wanted. We wanted them to let the child know that she had an Eskimo background and she's got Eskimo grandmothers or aunts and all, and this couple are very glad to do this for her. And now with this second child, before she had it, I talked to her and talked to her, and I tell her, you know, to think before she placed it in the home of my auntie. I'm not against it, but I mean, it's none of my business. It's hers to do with what she wants, because I think I helped her out of the first one. It's placed in a very, very good home. It couldn't be better off. This child, this woman's name is Mr. and Mrs. Boyd, Jack and Eileen, and the Christian name of the baby was Cynthia May. They had changed the name. They changed the name to Eileen Junior Boyd, to the name of this adopting mother. But now, after 11 years of fruitful years, she was barren for 11 years, and these Eskimos believe this very much, that if a person couldn't have a child, and then if the woman was able to bear a child and still she couldn't conceive, if she had adopted a child, and a year or two later they were sure to have her one. And Mr. and Mrs. Boyd now, after 11 years of being married and no children, they adopt Cindy. They're having a baby this summer of their own. But they, you know, I think her husband, she said, is Ukrainian or something. But there's some sort of people like that. They're the kind that don't believe in Christmas and so on. What you call them, their religion. And I told Elizabeth, this is another thing I told Elizabeth, is not to put faith in the way, as long as it was a good home, you know. But just let the child know that again, she's her family is. But not to put faith in the way. This girl was going to become a nun, in fact. My grandfather wouldn't keep her concentrated, so she didn't.
Well, now, where did you get that nun? Did you get
But she had a lot of Catholic girlfriends, and she went to the churches there. But then I think she made a mistake with the second child that she just left in the home, but I don't know. I don't know how she is, but I know that she had gone to Art and asked for help to see if she can get this support, child support.
This maybe is too big to go into this afternoon, but you have a child that comes that's born out of wedlock, and that child has almost three parents. One, there is the real father. Then there is the parents who adopted. The parents who adopt that child.
Elizabeth, you mean you're talking
anyone.
About?
No, I'm talking about in general.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyhow, there are two sets of parents. There's the biological father, and then there is the biological mother, of course. And then there are the adopting parents. So it's got two sets of parents,
mm-hmm.
that child has.
Mm-hmm.
From that time on, among Eskimo now, I'm talking in general, but maybe you can't talk so generally. Does the child recognize the biological father as well as the adopting parents? Can he expect anything from the biological father?
No, I don't think so.
That's cut off pretty much.
They always know that it is their father and their real father, but they don't expect nothing from him. It's just cut off. It's nothing to do with him. And, well, his adopting parents, that is his parents. And I've never seen maybe there is now, but I've never seen an adopting Eskimo home that's not as cruel to their adopted child. Maybe there are some, but in my side I've never seen any, you know, I mean, I've never seen them. And but they will always know their mother.
Can you expect anything from his mother? Can she expect anything from her mother, the adopted child?
Well,
if it's not, you know.
If the mother has been nice and giving the child little presents or maybe buying him something, then maybe he'll grow up to expect something from the mother, and he'll feel hurt if he doesn't get nothing from the mother that is his real mother. But a lot of people, I doubt if they, some will and some won't.
Yeah, I guess it's the general question.
Yeah.
Would he, I'm going to persist anyhow, will he call his real mother, mother?
Well, he know that's his mother, but I doubt if he'd call this his mother.
Well, how would he talk to her?
Well, there's my sister-in-law, Bessie Amos. She's been married about three times. And from her first husband, she's had two children. And they are both raised up by their grandfather and grandmother, the Cockneys, Bob Nulligach.
By
the mother's father. Bessie Amos is the daughter of Bob and Margaret Cockney.
Right.
Okay. When she had two, she was married,
mm-hmm.
and she had two children. And then her husband died. And the grandparents raised up her two children for her. Although she was in the home with them all the time, but then she remarried. But still, even when she remarried, she didn't take these two children with her. They stayed back with their grandfather. Not because her second husband didn't want them, but because she felt she owed those two children to her parents because they had raised them up. And these two, they wouldn't think nothing of it. They think that it's theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Agnes, the oldest daughter. She calls her mother Bessie mother.
Mm-hmm.
She calls her grandfather grandmother and grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy, he was younger, I suppose.
Andy?
Uh-huh. The son, her son. And he called his grandmother Nanang and Mang. He said mother sometimes and grandmother sometimes. And always Adadang, that means grandfather. And mostly Ananang and Adadang, grandmother and grandfather. Mm-hmm. But maybe he wanted something special, he'd say, mother. Mm-hmm. And it come the time for him to talk to his mother, his real mother, Bessie. He always called her Bessie. I don't know what he always called her, but this is something that just hit me, reminded me when you ask. Is one morning there he go and wake up his mother, his real mother. She's sleeping, you know, and he's going to wake her up early in the morning. So say, Mang and Bessie. He didn't know what to call her.
He took all the names he could think of.
He's going to wake her up and he says, hey, and he felt it was kind of not nice to say hey, and he's going to say Bessie, and then he's thinking, well, gee, to call his mother by her English name. And mind you, I've heard a lot of children with parents that's calling their parents by their first names. Adopted children.
As if they say, called you Jesse.
Yeah, Jesse and Harry or Colin or whatever it was. I've heard a lot of children call their parents by their first names.
What does Andy call Bessie's current husband?
She calls him Mike.
Who is he?
He's the brother of my husband, the oldest brother, Michael Amos.
Oh, I see. Bessie gets her name Amos
from her
current husband.
Uh-huh. So now he calls her mom now, of course.
Yeah, Andy calls Bessie
mm-hmm.
mom.
At the first time when he's going to, I guess, talk to her for himself, he didn't know. He was at last for what to call her. But again, let's see, how can I?
Well,
there's a lot of them I know that don't call their... they don't like Bessie and Mike. They got an adopted son. He's 5 years old. He calls them his mom and dad. And they made it known to him that he's adopted from a woman, Mabel Grubin. He doesn't call her mother. He doesn't want to call her mother.
Oh, Mabel?
Mabel. Uh-huh. Lawrence doesn't want to call Mabel his mother.
Yeah.
He says Mabel, or that woman. This is your mother. No, she's not. She's not my mother. Bessie is my mother. He'll say this, and he's a very spoiled child. And I've heard some children say, that's my mom, but this other one is my real mom, too.
Absolutely.
Now, which mom is your real mom? Instead of having their real mother for this, to point out, they say their adopted mother is their real mom, and that other one is their other mom. It's all mixed up. You know, it's all mixed. Some will say their mother, and this is their stepmother, and that is my real mother. But a lot of them will say, as a child, of course, this is my real mother, and that is just my other mother. How is she your other mother? I don't know, just my other mother.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know. I think they just all mixed.
How about Clara and her little girl? What's the little girl called Clara? What does she call Annie?
She calls her Clara. And sometimes mommy, if she really wants to, Clara tries very hard to say, say mommy, then I'll give it to you. Say mommy to me. Call me mommy. Nah, you're too funny. She calls Annie mommy. She calls John daddy. And then she goes and calls Clara, her mother, if she wants something real. She's just small, of course.
Is it possible that the reason for this is that the most intense care has been given by Annie and John?
Yes. Well, this is their intention. That's that they've taken it. Of course, Clara does.
Seriously, as
parents. Uh-huh. Clara, of course, has done very good. I mean, she's a good daughter. She helps them with every ounce of strength she has. You know, she practically Well, she's the one that looks after all the children at work, and this is why she had, she quit school really young. I don't think she quit school to help at home. I think she got pregnant and then she didn't have school anymore. And I think she could have gone back to school, but she doesn't like being in a lower grade than her younger brother. And Joey last year was slow in his school year. Joey, my son. This year he's put every strength he had in it, and I see him try so hard. Why? Because he knows Eddie is pretty smart, and he knows if he don't try that, if he don't put his whole self in, Eddie's gonna catch him. So I got a report card from his teacher that Joey is here. He's done so good, you know, and he's passed his grade. But Joey had tried so hard, he wouldn't even open his report card to look at it. He was scared. Although he knew he tried so hard, he was, well, last year, you see, he had to try over again. And this year he wondered if he had made it. He doesn't want, I'm scared of what he'll do. If
did he feel hurt when he had to do it over again?
Well, sort of, I suppose he felt hurt, but what he did was, my children never had kindergarten, and they have to get them for readiness class, ready for reading. Like Eddie this year, he was in this getting ready for reading class. So I got a report card for Eddie. Eddie will has missed quite a bit of school because he's been sick quite a bit. He easily gets sick. But it says Eddie will be ready for reading. He'll, you know, he'll enter into reading class. He has passed this year and he'll be ready for next year's grade one. And I hope to get, I've never got none of them in kindergarten. Get Ricky in this year.
But you think that it helps?
It helps. That's why they have getting ready for reading class now, for the ones that didn't have kindergarten. They claim that kindergarten is good for the children. And when they had kindergarten, they're ready to enter grade one with the first year of school. But if they haven't had kindergarten, they have to prepare them for grade one. That's why Eddie, they don't have a grade, nothing for them. They just have on the top of their paper there, getting ready for reading class. Special class. Mrs. Hoffman is a special teacher for this. But I think that's why Clara didn't go back to school, as she didn't want to be in a lower grade than her brother. And this is why my sister-in-law, Lily, she was then Lily Killebear. She quit school the minute Vivian passed her one grade. The same year she quit school. She didn't want to be in a grade lower than her younger sister.
They had gone together for a while?
No. Vivian was always lower, one grade lower than she was with the kid. And then as she got older, caught Lily and stayed in the same grade longer. And the next year, Vivian, where Lily failed and over again the next